Welcome to episode 19 of the Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reef Mystery series, and I'm here with my co-host, the effervescent, just emphasis on that, Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, Megan Daly, we meet again. Well,
we do,
out there in the ether somewhere. Talk us through the major events in Megan Land this week.
I'm very excited because I am off to the theatre twice this week. I love going to the theatre.
Twice?
Yes, twice.
I'm not going anywhere and you're going twice.
I'm really excited. Actually, do you know what? Theatre twice and I'm going to see William Barton at in concert as well. So I am actually going out three times. I'm going to see Boy Swallows Universe with two lovely ladies that I met donkeys years ago now when we were all, I suppose, mummy bloggers. And I'm off to see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And, yeah, I'm off to see William Barton as well. So I've got a really busy week, but I'm really – I love – it really fills up my soul seeing live theatre and live music, so I'm very excited about it.
Well, I'm just, you know, happy that you're doing it for both of us because I'm not going anywhere. I'm at home with Netflix and, you know, and my children, which is, you know, about as exciting as it gets.
That's
for
so
me
exciting.
At the moment. I do love I love the theatre as well. I love movies. I love live music. It's an interesting thing because it's really important as an author to – my co-host on So You Want to Be a Writer calls it having a creative date with yourself, and she actually, you know, is very, like, once a week she goes and does something that will, you know, like, make her think about creativity or something in a slightly different way. And I think that's how she discovered that she's an artist, so and has actually now built a career as an artist as well as all of the other things she does, was part of this creative date, you know, to fill up her writing inspiration. And she discovered that she was actually an incredibly accomplished artist just by trying something different. So, yeah, creative dates are really important. At the moment, most of my creative dates are all about just sort of getting out into nature by myself or about reading a book. You know, I'm trying really hard to read things I haven't, you know, really read a lot of before, or try authors I haven't really tried before, just to kind of mix things up a bit. Because I think, you know, we've spoken about this. I went very hard down that Regency romance rut for a while there. But I'm trying to kind of break free of that. And the other thing, of course, that I do, which is, you know, about creativity as much as anything else for me, is gardening. I just, you know, it's we're kind of planning what we're going to do with our new garden. But, yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's amazing how uplifted you feel after seeing somebody else's imagination at work, don't you think?
Yeah, and it does fill you up creatively, and it does help you to think in a different way, and it just I really, really enjoy it. And I'm a bit the same with gardening. I find gardening very, I suppose, mindful, and I find live theatre and live music very inspiring. So,
and I think it's, you know, if you are in the situation I am in at present where you have, you know, kids at home under stay-at-home orders or lockdown or whatever, it's so important for kids to try to get them to try different things even at home, or to do a puzzle, to do a collage, to play a guitar, to get outside, you know, in a mindful way. Yeah, because it is how, you know, I mean, boredom is something that is really important for creativity, because where boredom is, if you give it just a little nudge in the right direction,
absolutely,
that's where creativity comes in. It's interesting because I watch Book Boy Junior, who's 14, and when I take his phone off him, which happens regularly because he's generally, you know, he's a little bit naughty with his screen time, when I take his phone off him, that's when he draws. That's when he practices guitar. That's when he does all of those things. So I think it's really important that we, untether them from those screens as much as we can as well. Anyway, that's all very exciting. But would you like to hear what I'm doing this week,
What are you up
apart from
to?
all of those things? Well, I am, maybe this is why I'm doing all of this reading, because I'm getting ready for reading hour. I am an Australia. I am an Australia Reads ambassador this year. There's like a billion of us, and we're all out there doing our best to spread the word about Australian stories and Australian reading hour. But it's actually on Tuesday, the 14th of September. We are going to be celebrating reading, and it's super easy to get involved. This is what I absolutely love about this. There's a whole lot of stuff happening online if you go and have a look at sort of the at Australia Reads on, any of the social matters. So, at Australia Reads, you'll find a whole bunch of different things. There's virtual events that are on. There's a million different things that are happening. You can, I think there's a website. Let me discover what that is, australiareads.org.au. But all you have to do to celebrate Australian Reading Hour is to pick up a book, preferably Australian, like I would go for that. Preferably, like, let's face it, The Wolf's Howl, A Maiden and Reeve Mystery by A.L. Tate, but whatever. Pick up a book and read for an hour, and it can be any hour of the day. It on the 14th of September. There's no prescribed time. We don't all have to sit down at 11 o'clock or anything like that. You just like this is just like a license to take an hour to read a book, which I just think every single day should be like this.
Absolutely. I wish we did more of that in schools, and I wish that teachers sat down and also were able to have the time to sit down and read with their students. I would love to see this happen.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know both of my boys have like a prescribed silent reading time, like once a week or once a fortnight or something like that. So the high school does encourage it, which is great. But how much actual reading gets done in that time, in the classroom, I have no, I've never asked. I didn't want to know. But yeah, so overall, I that's what I'm doing. I'm getting ready for that. I'll be talking about it online and, doing whatever I can do. I've got an idea at the moment to do a little social media series somewhere, probably Instagram, I think, about, the books that made me a writer. Because one of the
Oh,
things,
that's nice.
yeah, well, one of the things I discovered when I moved house was that I've got this little collection of books that I have been carrying around with me pretty much since childhood, some of them. And they're on my shelf, and so I can actually hold them up like these are the actual books that made me a writer. So I'm thinking I might do that at some point. So keep an eye
I
out for
love that
that if you,
idea.
yeah. Anyway, speaking of books that made us, let's talk about our book mail this week. What have we got, Megan?
Oh, well, speaking of books that made us, I am a big fan of Emily Rodda and particularly a lot of her earlier work. And recently she's, I think, gone back. Some of her latest books have been some of my favorite. I feel like she's gone back to some of the really interesting writing that she did early on. And I have got in my hot little hands the 21st anniversary edition of Deltora Quest,
I've got one
which
too. It's
I just,
hardback. It's
it's
beautiful.
beautiful.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. I think this would be the perfect gift for they're probably young adults now who've enjoyed the Deltora Quest series or for new readers to Deltora Quest. If you don't know much about Deltora Quest, it's got three companions, Leaf, Barda, and Jasmine, and they are on a perilous quest to find the seven lost gems of the Belt of Deltora. And I have to say, my copies in my library are looking very old and battered, and I am going to replace those copies with several copies of this new anniversary edition. It is really beautiful. So, if you enjoy a good quest and you've not yet discovered Deltora Quest, highly recommended, and a good one for fans of Deltora.
Yeah,
I've
I think
also,
if you've got a young sort of, if you've got someone in your life that did grow up with Deltora, because it was a massive thing at when it sort of,
huge.
and for many, many years. But I reckon that there'd be some of them that would be turning 21 this year, and I think it would be a great 21st present.
It would be. Yeah, no, it's a gorgeous. It really is a good production as well. Next up, I've got Cranky Chicken by Catherine Battersby, and it is a brand new graphic novel series for very, very young readers. Let me read you the blurb. It says everything about chicken is cranky. Cranky eyes, cranky eyebrows, super sharp, cranky beak, and even cranky, scratchy feet. Everything makes chicken cranky. The sun is too bright. The dirt is too dirty. What cranky chicken is not is lonely. Nope, nope, definitely not. But then along comes a very cheerful worm named Speedy, who just wants to be friends.
This sounds so cute.
It's really good. It's cute, but it's also super quirky. And it's, as I said, a new series for, I would say, readers from 6+, beginning readers who like comics or that graphic novel style. It's a nice little volume, and it's got 3 short stories. It's quite a giftable little volume, I think. My 10-year-old really enjoyed the humor in it, as did I. And so it's one for, you know, anyone that likes a bit of sarcasm. I've always been an owner of backyard chickens, and I am the granddaughter of a chicken farmer. So I have a very soft spot for chickens and their crankiness and quirks. They're really hilarious to sit and watch. And I feel like Battersby has sat and watched chickens to get their behavior right, because she's totally captured their personalities in this main character. And I've definitely owned some cranky chickens. I had a bantam hen years ago that used to peck my painted toenails if they were painted, and if you picked her up, she would bite at you. And she once pulled my eldest daughter's earring right through her ear.
Oh.
Earring back and all, blood, stitches required, had to be re-pierced several years later. So, you know, like, that grey fluffy little bantam was a foul, foul indeed. But yeah,
maybe there's another book in that, babe.
Oh, mate, it was out of control. But I do digress. So in Cranky Chicken, we've got a super cranky chook and a joyful and an upbeat worm, and they make unlikely friends. And the dialogue between the two characters is what I feel drives the story, adds this beautiful richness, sarcasm and humour to the tale. There's not very many words, but each one's really well chosen. And again, the illustrations appear very minimal, but they contain a lot in terms of visual literacy. What Battersby is able to portray in just the sort of flick of an eyebrow is quite outstanding. So that's a highly recommended one from me. And then finally, I've got My Beautiful Voice by Joseph Kohler and illustrated by Alison Colpoise. And this is from the award-winning poet, and it's a moving lyrical picture book about a shy child unlocking the power of their own voice through poetry. Beautifully illustrated, powerful and heartwarming text, and it shows young people everywhere that their voice can be powerful and beautiful, however small. Alison Colpoise, many of you would be familiar with her work. She just does the most outstanding illustrations. They've got that kind of on-trend vintage feel. She uses lots of pops of neon colour, and this one's got a really magical, magical teacher and a person who is finding their voice through poetry and performance. It's a lovely one to encourage empathy in young children and show shy children how they can feel brave.
Aww, yeah, that sounds like lovely.
What have you got?
Well, if you've got chickens, babe, I've got geese. I have got a book called Who's a Goose by Scott Stewart, who is the author of My Shadow is Pink, which is a picture book that is constantly recommended in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook community. It comes up a lot. And this one is hilarious. It's really funny. It's really lovely. The illustrations are bright and funny. It's not like there's not huge numbers of words, but it's, you know, full of rhymes. It's full of also of collective nouns.
Gosh,
I do love a collective noun. It's very, very funny. So, you know, it's like, it's kind of like an older goose and a younger goose, and they're kind of chatting to each other. I'll just read you the first bit, because it also looks at the ridiculousness of the English language. One goose is goose and two goose is geese. Bill, will you please keep quiet? I'm trying to teach. One moose is moose, so two moose is meese? No, two moose is moose and lots is a herd. So it's, you know, it's like it's one of those things that kind of looks at the ridiculousness of our language in a very cute and funny way. So I loved that one. I've also got here one that I think that tweens will love. It's actually the second in a series. It's called Lola Out Loud by Shannon and Taylor Steadman. And it's all about Lola, you know, who does sort of YouTube stuff, and she's, you know, funny, it's cute, it's like a real 10-year-old, 9 to 10-year-old will pick this up and just think it's fantastic. So Lola's got a whole bunch of challenges. Aunt Helen's arrived and she's heartbroken, which means she's no fun at all. And, they're sort of like trying to kind of make the holidays fun. And yeah, so it's a funny contemporary, tweeny sort of read that I think that they'll love. It's got illustrations, it's got, cute little diagrams all throughout. And yeah, look, it's the kind of book that I think if I was nine, I would just pick up in a
Yeah,
second.
I reckon that would have been the best seller at my book fair last week. We had to
Definitely.
reorder many copies of that one, so
Yeah, yeah,
it was
yeah.
flying off the shelf.
Yeah, because the first one in the series is called Lola Online. This is Lola Out Loud, and then I think there's a third one coming as well. So that's very fun. And then the third one I've got is also quite a fun read. Now, when I first picked this up, it's called Kid President Totally Rules, and it's by Jack Heath, who is a terrific author. I don't know if you've ever had him for a school visit, but
I
he's
have. He's
great.
wonderful. He was.
He's
I had
so
him
good.
when he was about 12
Oh,
for a
he.
school visit.
About 12, did you say?
Yeah, I reckon he was about 12. He looked about
I think he's
12.
about 17 now because he looks about 17 now. No, I'm joking. He's great. He came to the Shoalhaven Readers and Writers Festival at the last one that we were able to have, which was 2019, and he was brilliant. Like he had a room full of, I think it was like 300 year 7 and 8 students, and that's a hard gig. Like that is not an easy gig, and he was fantastic. He had them in
Yeah,
the
he's
palm of his
great.
hand. So this particular book, so it's called Kid President Totally Rules. It's by Jack Heath. It's illustrated by Max Rambaldi. When I first saw it, I thought it was about Kid President the YouTuber. Have you ever seen Kid President on YouTube?
Sadly, yes.
Oh, hilarious. So funny. And but then I thought, no, wait a minute, Jack Heath's written this. It's not that. This is actually about Jackson, who has accidentally been elected to rule as the first ever kid president. And he has big ideas, free ice cream in every school, homework to be made illegal, which, I'd be on board with, and all national parks to become skate parks. But not everyone is happy about the new changes, and they are willing to do just about anything to kick him out of office. So again, this is your kind of tweeny audience. It's got all the fun and the illustrations of the sort of, the books that sort of age group adores, like your Wimpy Kids and all of that sort of stuff. But there's more text, it's more complex, it's a slightly longer book. I reckon it would be a great one to kind of, take the kid who might be stuck in that Wimpy Kid rut and kind of move them towards a slightly longer, slightly more complex kind of story. Still full of illustrations, still with the white space in the text, so it's not, it doesn't look too overwhelming or whatever. But it's funny, and Jack Heath is very clever. Those
Oh, he's great.
he writes
I
the
use
the
him,
Liar
yeah, a
series was
lot.
great, the
Yeah,
400
yeah.
Minutes. He knows what He knows what kids like to read, and I
He
think that
does.
this
And
one will go
it's
well.
fast-paced writing and it's very engaging, like you
Yeah.
said, but it's good writing,
Yeah,
which is
yeah.
something I really appreciate.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So that's all of the book mail this week. Now we are going to go to our bingo question. And the bingo questions are going to be, well, they are always the questions that come up over and over and over again in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook community. Now, this one this week is one of those ones that bubbles along. We get at least, I reckon once a week, once a fortnight, this one comes up, and it is all about books about puberty. The question will come up in different guises. I'm looking for, puberty books for girls, puberty books for boys. How do I explain this? What do I do? But it's a regular. So I thought it was one that we should have a chat about. And I know, Megan, that this is an area that you have actually done quite a lot of research in over the years. So take it away, because my knowledge of puberty books is fairly limited, I have to say. So it's all
Right.
about
Well,
you.
yeah, I've sort of been working in schools for oh, so long now, Al. And the library is often used for those sort of human relationships education talks, and I've had lots of discussions over the years with the presenters and all sorts of things. And I've been collecting books for tweens and tweens on all of the things for many years now for the various schools that I've worked at And for my own children. At all times, I like to purchase books. This is what I'm going to say first. I like to purchase books which are written by experts in the field or with experts in the field. So I like psychologists, counselors, teachers, and doctors to have either written them or be involved in the writing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think that's really important. We don't need a celebrity to write these books. I'm just going to say that now.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. The problem with books about puberty is that you as a parent or an educator need to know what you're looking for and what your kids are looking for and what you want to cover. And you will cover these things at different ages and stages. So are we talking about consent? And consent books can start at a very young age. I've got books on consent for very, very, like I would say from 3+, and then I've got books on consent for teenagers. Are you talking about body image, diversity, gender identity, protective behaviours? Are you talking about puberty changes, pornography, or just sex and how babies are made? So you need to really think about what you're wanting to cover, because you're not necessarily going to find a book that will cover all of those topics as well as you want them covered. Mm. Yeah, and then let's go back to the beginning. If you are looking for books for younger children or tweens that you haven't yet had the talk with, you absolutely must own The Amazing True Story of How Babies Are Made. That's a great book, and I've reviewed that many times on my website. It's a very no-nonsense look at bodies and reproduction, and it is like an updated version of Where Did I Come From, which I'm sure you had when you were a teen.
I did, and also I'm pretty sure I read that with my boys as well I never in my whole life else. The special cuddle has stuck with me forever.
The special cuddle has been updated in this book, let me tell you. In fact, it's confronting.
Oh, okay. No more special cuddles. Even, all right. Oh, that's funny.
For even younger children, like I'm talking 2-3-year-olds, there's also some really lovely board books called Boys Will Be and Girls Are Pretty, looking at girls and boys, and they're good for both genders. Now, I then want to talk about maybe what you as a parent or a caregiver or an educator need first. And I'm going to say here that I really like a lady called Michelle Mitchell. She is an educator. Many years experience in the classroom. She left teaching to establish a harm prevention charity, which was called Youth Excel. And she's had lots of years of experience working in the tween and teen space. And she wrote this great book called Everyday Resilience, which I really enjoyed. It became like a parenting go-to book for me and one I've had in all of my libraries that I've worked in. It's one I often recommend to parents. She's got a journal that goes with that book now, which is a really good one. I think it's also called Everyday Resilience, but it's a journal that tweens and teens can work through. And she has a really good book called The Girl's Guide to Puberty and The Boy's Guide to Puberty. So, and they're more aimed at the children. So I think Michelle Mitchell is a great starting point for you as a parent. I also really like the new Madonna King Teenager book, and I had the opportunity to interview her between COVID lockdowns last year, and she was great. Now, she is I guess you would call her a popular media personality. She is a journalist, but she has written the book with a lot of experts, and I found that book, I listened to it in audio first and then I purchased a copy in print because I found that really good for the tweens in my own life and for understanding the tween brain and how it works in my students. So there's some for the adults. And then for the kids, and I'm sure you've got plenty to add here, I've looked at what has been talked about in Your Kids Next Read, our group, but I've also added a few of my own. The Puberty Book by Kelsey Powell, which is now in its 6th edition, and it just basically is like it answers all of the really direct pre- and teen questions, and it's just got simple language, honest answers, and it just talks. It's just a very, I guess it's like an encyclopedia of all of the things that you need to know. So if you're looking for an overview, that's a good one. The S Word by James Roy, which I meant to look earlier, but I'm absolutely positive it's had a new edition and it's been updated. That one's a really good one by a great Australian male author. I like the Kaz cookbooks. Mm. She's got one for girls aged 8 to 12, and then she's got girl stuff for 13+. I like Welcome to Your Period by Yumi Stimes, which she's written with a doctor, and also Welcome to Consent. So they're some of the ones that I really like. Now, often we get this like, oh, they're They're gendered. I guess I would say to that that it's important for boys and girls to know what is happening at puberty, and I think that all of these books can be used with both genders. Yes, some are absolutely marketed towards girls and some are marketed towards boys, but I think that it's important for both genders to understand what is happening to the opposite gender.
Yeah,
What
I
have you got
agree.
for us?
Well, I don't really have any because it's not it's an interesting thing. I remember the first one I ever got was this kind of dry sort of paperback, and I'm talking back in the day, and it was called Have You Started Yet? And it was handed to me, by my mum when I was about, 11 or 12, and I just kind of wanted to throw it in the bin,
Wow, I bet
because
you did.
but it's still there, like it's still out there. I'm sure it's been repackaged, I'm sure it's been updated. It had a lot of really good information in it, but it was just like the cover on it on the version that I had made it seem as though, periods
Wasn't
were this
worth
really
it
big
for you.
secret. And I really love the fact that there are so many different options available now, and you can choose like the tone or the approach that's right for your kid, which I think is the key to the whole mess is working out what does your kid know, what don't they know, how and what approach is going to work best for them. Is it the Kaz Cook version? Is it, something more straightforward? How are we going to approach this? I mean, I remember the boys and I read What's Happening to Me, which is the update, it's the next one along
Yes,
from Where Did I Come From? And it was just hilarious because
I
I read
remember
it
that
with
one.
them when they were about 9, and it was all about, wet dreams and masturbation, and then, well, we're going to end up with a, explicit rating here if I'm not careful. But and of course they were just like writhing with embarrassment, although not so much Book Boy Junior. He's just far too curious about all these things, and always has been. But it's a very, matter of, I've always had a very matter of fact approach to it all, and I started with it young, just conversational wise, and just update with bits and pieces of information over time until they told me I needed to stop.
Stop.
So once we got to that point, I had to just hope and trust that they had what they needed, to go forward. But I've never given them a book because I just don't think they would read it.
Look, I have I've taken a very similar approach, and it's interesting now having much younger children in the house. They're learning things a lot sooner than potentially the beekeeper was
They do.
planning.
Yes.
But you know, and but with the now teen in my house and tween, I've armed them with the information that I want them to have. The school has also armed them with information, and then I think it's a matter of if you think they might pick up a text at some point, just popping it in their room and not putting it on a special shelf and saying, here's a special book for you to read, not making it a big deal at all. Just saying, look, this has got lots of information in it. If you want it, it would be useful to you at some point. And, it's there if they want it. Whether or not they're going to read it is a whole other thing. The other thing is, there's a lot of fiction now. I'm thinking of the Nova Wheatman book,
Of
and I'm
course,
thinking of the new Pip Harry book that delves into it. There's sort of an updated version of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Blume. And so a lot of the fiction books also explore these puberty issues in really great ways, which are quite relatable to young people. So look, there's so many options out there, but basically I do think you need to arm yourself as a parent with a little bit of information, because otherwise your children are going to come home and they will tell you stuff that they may tell you stuff or they may not. You may overhear stuff that they have heard in the playground and you're like, well, actually, that's not how it works. So it is important to get some of this language right.
So true. All right. Now, speaking of getting language right, we're going to move on to our quick tips. And I have a couple of, well, one very excellent tip, which I'm going to share. And this one is from Dave Lees. Oh, I'm not sure if it's Lees or
Lees or
Lays.
Lays, who
Yeah,
knows?
Leys. He's the author of The Institute of Fantastical Inventions, and he wrote a post for my website at alisontate.com. And his number one piece of advice for young writers is to write what you don't know yet. Because one of the most common and most commonly quoted pieces of advice to writers of any type is to write what you know. And it makes sense. You kind of work on, on the stuff that you have knowledge of, the feelings you have knowledge of, and you can sort of like jump off your story into that way. But he decided that he was going to try something different when it came to writing the Institute of Fantastical Inventions. He wanted to write a story, he wanted to write a fantasy story, but then, couldn't think of anything new that he had to say about magic and elves and all of that kind of stuff. But then it occurred to him that there was something out there that was really fantastical, wondrous in its capacity for change and transformation, as to be almost like magic, and that was actually science. But he didn't know a lot about science. Student was, as a student, being a science was not actually his strong suit. So he took his ignorance of science and he decided it was actually a secret gift, because his lack of knowledge meant that he could research enough. He could find a scientific theory or field, research it, and then he could play with it. He could jump off from it. He could use that kernel of scientific truth, and then he could embellish it and stretch it and adapt it and make it into something funny and fantastical. Because his lack of knowledge, made science feel almost magical. So I think that's actually kind of a great piece of advice for young writers, because you can have an idea about something and you can think, oh, I don't really know anything about that, I won't write anything about that. When in actual fact, research is your friend. Ignorance is actually your friend, because you know the kinds of questions that you want answered, which means that you can put them into your story. And then you only need enough information to ground the story before you start to like take it off into a whole different realm. So there you go. That's this week's quick tip. Write what you don't know yet.
I love that. And as a teacher librarian, that's what we spend a lot of time telling our students, that, what you don't know yet is really exciting, because it allows the opportunity to, you're starting from scratch with some of your research. And a teacher librarian does love a bit of research.
Oh,
So
yes. Love
yeah,
a bit
may
of
dig that
research.
article out, I think. That sounds really great. I've got an article as well, actually, that I'm sharing this week. Mine is in the latest Access Journal, which is a library, school library journal. And it's an article showcasing Jackie Child, who is the author of the website Tinkering Child. And many of you will also know her as I hashtag her on all of my social media as best teaching partner ever, because we worked together at St Aidan's. And now I'm going to try and not get teary because I'm missing her very much. And we both were really, really heavily involved in our school library at St Aidan's and making it a place of wonder and curiosity. And Jackie was a huge part of that. And this article talks about how she set up her website Tinkering Child, but it also talks about maker spaces and school library spaces. So my tips are around that. And I'd just like to say that I think that libraries and maker spaces go together, because they're both places of wondering and researching and skill building. So my tips, if you are in a school as a teacher librarian or a teacher interested in maker spaces, or if you are a parent who's wanting to start a maker space in your school, is to first of all get onto Jackie Child, Tinkering Child, and then start, if you're in a library particularly, start from books, because books spark great ideas. And combining, we always found that combining technology and literature has got huge benefits. It's not just a benefit for the reading, it's often a springboard for some really interesting thinking. We've combined things over the years like mindful reading time, book week activities, and author visits with opportunities to innovate and develop understandings of sort of doing and making to learn. So we've really, a lot of our makerspace activities have come from literature, because literature has just got so many fantastic starting points for wondering and thinking. Tip number two is allow students to play, discover, fix, and tinker. And Jackie is always on about making mistakes and tinkering and having a go and just playing and having fun. And she's taught me so much about this. I guess I was always, and still am, nervous about technology and incorporating technology as an educator, because I think Oh gosh, I don't know what I'm doing 100%. And Jackie just, she will regularly say, look, I don't know what I'm doing, but, and she learns with her students and she shows them that it's great to make mistakes and discover as you learn. And I think they teach her so much. She was a rally car driver in a previous career. And so
course.
she's very, I know, she's so unusual. Talks at a million miles an hour, which is also how she drives. But I'm sure that's why she's got that brain that's just able to fix and tinker, because she's got this really great knowledge of cars and how they work. And then somehow she's transferred that knowledge into the library. Anyway, and then my final tip is to start small. And this is like, Jackie will be laughing at me listening to this, but I love a low-tech option and then add in technology as you go. So if, like me, you feel really nervous about incorporating technology or maker spaces into your library, start with things that you understand, like gardening. I often started from gardening or using cardboard or sewing or cross stitch or any kind of stitching, and then adding in technology as you go. Some circuitry here and there, a bit of robotics, a bit of AR technology, and then, a bit of green screen. And then all of a sudden, you've just got this, you're just adding these layers of complexity and wonderfulness, richness to these small projects that started quite small and low tech, and then you can add in the high tech. So that's just some of my thoughts around that. And I'm going to end with, I'm going to read out the last paragraph of this article in the Access Journal. It's the September 2021 edition of Access. I'm still a firm believer in giving the girls opportunities to try new software and technology and to learn by doing and sharing with friends and peers. Whenever I have used the makerspace equipment in units of work, it is not for the product, but for the process. The critical thinking, collaboration, innovative approaches to solving problems, and the joy and the creativity in making, which I observe and give feedback to students and teachers. She's an amazing person to follow online. I adore her. I deeply miss working with her on a day-to-day basis, but we text all the time.
Well,
So there you
see
go.
the wonders of technology. At least you
I
can
know, right?
text all the time, right?
I know.
Oh, speaking of technology, what I'm doing this week is buying a new computer. Because I've just realized that I've had the current one for 8 years. Can we just
That
have a
is
moment?
a good
Can
innings.
we take a moment? It is a good innings, and but I've realized that I can't even upgrade the operating system or anything anymore.
Right.
So the time has come. But what I have to decide is whether I stick with my 10-year-old keyboard, which has got, like the keys are there, but like they've faded. The E's faded, the D's faded, the S's faded, the A's faded.
Oh, but the memories.
Well, it's helped me write, at least a million words, I reckon. Like if I, even if I start to break it down, or do I get a new one? So, stay tuned because these are the kinds of things that keep me awake at night. But yes, I'm quite excited about that. It'll be, good
I
to
would be nervous.
about buying
A
a new
new
computer.
computer.
I
I
am a
just
bit
like
nervous. I
hate
am.
changes in
I
technology.
know, but
Why I hated
you
Jackie.
just get to a point where you have
I
to do it
know.
or you lose it. It's at some point this thing is going to die on me and I won't have any of it. So
And then you'll be crying.
then I'll be weeping buckets. So I, yeah. But before I start set the new one up, I'm going to have to clear out the old one because I don't want to transfer all the rubbish as well. So I'm in for at
Are you
least
a
2 days of
neat
it.
file keeper on your computer?
Just knowing what you know about me and the way that I go about things, do you think I am or do you think I'm
No,
not?
no, no. I think that Alison
No.
Rushby is probably an extremely good file keeper, but I think
She,
that
yeah.
Alison Tait is a little bit chaotic.
I'm a little bit haphazard. I make a fair fist of it, and then there are days where it all just goes pear-shaped, and then I just don't fix those days. And so, yeah, things are a bit chaotic in there. So I'm going to have to set aside at least a couple of days to actually just go through and sort it out. Which, who's got days for that? No
Yeah,
one's got days
nobody.
for that. That's why you never do it, right? Anyway, what are you doing? Surely you're not doing that.
Well, when I left St. Aidan's, I did that and I dumped everything on the desktop and then didn't know what to do with it all. And I ended up leaving most of it behind. So now I have to email poor Miss Olive anytime I need a document that I created. Miss Olive, do you think you could go and have a look for that Wheeler's e-platform letter I wrote home to parents in 2017? So I'm not great at files either. But what I am doing this week is I am just so excited about the end growing. I am celebrating this week. I'm sleeping in past 4 o'clock.
Oh,
so
wait
last
a
week
minute.
I had,
hold
oh my,
everything.
yeah.
That's so exciting.
I know, it was hideous. So I did rowing as a child. I do not remember the trauma because it was all about me. And apparently now that is the situation I find myself in. So my mother has absolutely no sympathy for me because it is all about my teenager who wanted to do rowing. But this last week I've had 3 mornings of 4 a.m. wake-ups, make the child breakfast, drive somewhere to rowing, often an hour and a half away. It's just been like,
that's
it's been awful.
Is she sick of it?
Sport.
Is she not wanting to? She
loves it. She loves it.
Of course she does. They always love the thing you don't want them to love, right?
She came home yesterday and she got in the car and she said, I think I found my thing.
Oh, no. And you went, oh, that's brilliant, darling. I'm so excited for you, right?
I had to stay silent. Because I had the beekeeper in my head saying, be encouraging, Megan, be encouraging. And I'm thinking, you are not the sucker getting up at 4 o'clock.
Oh, well, you know what? All I can say is enjoy that sleep in. I hope it's amazing. And we will be back again next week with more exciting news about sleep ins and computer keyboards, because apparently that's what this podcast is about now.
Oh, see you later.